likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and
welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And I'm now joined by Sung Yun Lee, who is a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, a National Asia Research Fellow, and an associate in research at the Korean Institute at Harvard University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sung Yun Lee.
Thank you for having me.
And it seems that the bluster coming from North Korea now is somewhat different in as much as these are explicit threats against the United States. In a statement from the North Korean National Defense Commission, which is the country's highest military leadership, the statement coming from them is, "We do not hide that a variety of satellites and long-range rockets which will be launched by the DPRK one after another and a nuclear test of higher level will target against the United States, the sworn enemy of the Korean people." Does this strike you as something different?
Well, in terms of their typical bluster and broad, it might, as usual, it is different in that, as we saw last month in mid-December, North Korea has apparently improve its ballistic missile technology for the first time ever since they first tried it, firing off a long-range missile for the first time in 1998. They were quite successful for the first time. So that is progress, and that is serving. It's a concern to the United States. North Korea at this point in early 2013 to make such an explicit threat against the United States, I would say, indicates that the regime is serious about conducting another missile test or even a nuclear test very soon, the coming week. And the reason for that would be, in 2012, leadership transitions in all the major capitals of the North Pacific. President Obama, of course, was reelected. The North Korean leader, the current one, over in the wake of his father's death. In late 2011, we had two elections, South Korea and Japan, last month, and earlier last year, Putin made his reemergence. So what this indicates is that for the North Korean leader, the other powers, the other leaders in the other capitals of the North Pacific region would be more appeasement prone. That is, they would be preoccupied with domestic issues and would be unwilling to escalate tension with North Korea. And this is an opportunity for North Korea's problems to export insecurity with the view toward bigger blandishment, more economic concessions to raise.
So, there's certainly been a pattern for some time, Sung Yun Lee, of North Korea expecting to be rewarded for bad behavior. And occasionally they've succeeded in being rewarded for bad behavior. But when they recently let off their most recent missile test, after one failed, the more recent successful one, the United Nations Security Council imposed sanctions on them. And that was just a couple of days ago. So that is, it's hard not to see this latest outburst as a response to that.
Well, yes, there are, of course, already in place and even newer or more strictly enforced sanctions passed just a couple of days ago within the United Nations. But consider the past 20 years of North Korea's nuclear blackmail or nuclear diplomacy, like pay, you see that North Korea has reaped literally tens of billions of dollars from the U.S. and South Korea alone, on record at least $11 billion in aid. And that speaks to some kind of success, I guess, achievement on the part of the region. We know North Korea is aid dependent. It is one of the poorest countries in the world. Yet, by creating problems, the neighbors in the region have been willing to ply North Korea with all kinds of advantages, including cash. And after a decent info, some rhetorical condemnation, UN sanctions passed, all powers in the past have gone back to rewarding North Korea, to resorting to crisis management or damage control diplomacy. So the prospects, I would say, from the North Korean perspective, are quite good to repeat this pattern.
Well, let us call you right back because the phone is breaking up, and we will do that as quickly as we can so we won't miss talking with you, Sung Yun Lee. We'll hang up right now and call you immediately back. Again, I'm speaking with Sung Yun Lee, who's a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He's a National Asia Research Fellow and an associate in research at the Korean Institute at Harvard University. And we're talking about the explicit threat from North Korea against the United States with the announcement that they will soon conduct a bigger nuclear test that will target against the United States, the sworn enemy of the Korean people. And we are hoping to get a better line this time. Sung Yun Lee, given that this pattern has apparently worked, the fact that China joined in these additional sanctions that were just enacted by the UN Security Council on Tuesday, I believe, and which appear to have created this belligerent response from North Korea, my understanding would be that they will be going through a period of austerity, shall we say. What is the situation vis-a-vis the harvests and the amount of food? First of all, this is all coming as a surprise to Korea watchers because they thought this new young leader might be liberalizing a little because he danced with the has a young wife and had Mickey Mouse dancing on television where he was watching. Or so, I mean, give us a sense of whether he's reverting back to the pattern of his parents and grandparents, or whether this recent little indication of a change in tone, shall we say, was short-lived.
I think really these are atmospherics, nothing substantive. That is, the young leader's preference for showcasing his bride or Mickey Mouse characters or Sylvester Stallone figures and so forth. These are personal preferences. Optimistic projections of Kim Jong-un, the current leader, doing things differently from his father and grandfather were mostly based on the fact that Kim Jong-un, as a young man, as a teenager, lived in Switzerland for a couple of years. Well, if you consider exposure to European cosmopolitanism as a cure for totalitarianism, one wonders how Pol Pot, the former Cambodian dictator who spent 4 years in Paris in his 20s, or the current Syrian dictator who studied medicine in London as a young man, sat on that kind of transformative experience. These are not the basis under which the North Korean regime operates. For the North Korean regime, nuclear weapons, the capability to one day perhaps marry clear a warhead with a long-range missile, those kinds of achievements are really a panacea, cure for North Korea's problems, internal problems, economic problems. And by having that military power to cause problems to the region, the powers, the world's biggest powers, China, the United States, Russia, Japan, South Korea, a middle power admittedly, all these powers have been giving North Korea aid. So it's been a very effective policy. The Chinese signed on to UN Security Council resolutions twice in 2006, once in 2009 in the wake of North Korea's second nuclear test, but in effect, China actually increased trade with North Korea. China increased its aid to North Korea even after signing on to those UN Security Council resolutions. So from the North Korean point of view, I think, yes, after a period of austerity, the odds are good that China will go back to its old ways and keep giving to North Korea.
Well, but from the Chinese point of view, they don't want the North to collapse and have the U.S. Army on the Yalu River, do they? And I'm surprised that somehow South Korea and the United States can't give China the sufficient assurances. Or is there a division in the Chinese leadership between the military old guard who support the North Koreans and the more outward-looking foreign ministry types?
I think you have to say that as in all vectors of national interest, you can imagine it's conceivable one day, say 10 years now from now, maybe 50 years from now, the Chinese will ultimately grow fed up with North Korea and really pull the plug on North Korea. We know that day has not yet come and will not come for the foreseeable future. The Chinese, yes, are concerned about the prospect of having a unified Korea, a pro-U.S. Korea with perhaps U.S. troops near the border. Americans and South Koreans really have no intention of posing such direct threat to the Chinese. They have no intention of maintaining U.S. troops along the Yalu River, yet the Chinese are not convinced. The Chinese also worry about the prospect of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of North Korean refugees flooding into China if North Korea were to collapse. And those are legitimate concerns, yes. But at the same time, I think the Chinese see a greater utility in having that North Korea card vis-a-vis the United States in China's long-term strategic competition. It's been a very useful political card for the Chinese because the United States, to a great extent, has relied on China to carry out diplomacy against North Korea vis-a-vis the DPRK on behalf of the United States. The U.S. has asked China to step in, and the Chinese have not been forthright in serving in that role.
Well, just in the last minute, it looks as though there will be a nuclear test in North Korea, and it will be a uranium bomb of a bigger yield than the two previous plutonium bombs. One didn't seem to work, the other one worked fairly well, although it was a very small yield. When do you think this is going to happen? Because it's certainly going to create a tremendous backlash.
Well, one thing, if you even a cursory overview of North Korea's past provocations, they usually coincide on a national holiday. You'll see that the North Koreans have a keen sense of timing. They do things, for instance, on July 4th in the United States. In 2006, they fired off 7 rockets, 1 long-range rocket on July 4th, Eastern Standard, at least, in Washington. They conducted their second nuclear test on May 25th, 2009, Memorial Day in the United States. They also have a penchant for doing things on a Sunday so as to capture the weekly news cycle, dominate the headlines, thereby put more pressure on their adversaries, Washington, Seoul, and so forth, to respond, to come up with some kind of a response. In that context, doing it before the South Korean presidential inauguration on February 25th, even before one of North Korea's major holidays, February 16th, which is the birthday of Kim Jong-il, the late leader.
Well, I'm afraid we absolutely run out of time here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I really have to end here, and I thank you so much for joining us, Sung Yoon Lee, again, Professor of International Affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.